It's on now. All right, how's everybody doing? Oh, come on, show some enthusiasm. I know it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Woo, yeah, raise the roof. There we go. Okay. Yeah, I like to have fun. Come on, this is, I know this is a techie boring session, but I like to have fun in my sessions. All right, you guys enjoying the conference so far? Good information? Good. Well, we'll continue that, hopefully, with this session. So make sure you're in the right room. We are talking about SQL Server in an Azure virtual machine. Okay, and kind of best practices, things we've seen from the field, kind of collected all the good information and provide that to you. So the question I have is who's familiar with Azure? And who's using SQL in a VM? It's a few of you. Okay, production? Okay, good. All right. We have way too much coffee this morning. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about SQL in a VM and sort of the best practices. Because any having performance issues with this, or what are you guys seeing? Everything good so far? Disk, yeah. So disk sort of seems to be the big one. And so we're going to talk about disks quite a bit, right? Kind of like warm-up procedures and allocation units and things like that. So kind of best practices around that. All right, a little bit about me. I don't like these brag me slides. I did this, I wrote this, whatever. This is all you need to know. There's my Twitter, my blog, my email address, my LinkedIn. If you have any questions, ping me. Happy to chat. All right. All right. Moving on. So here's what we're going to talk about. And we have an hour. I'm not quite sure we're going to make it through all of this, but we'll at least get to the important information. All right. So we will talk about blob storage and how that works. We'll talk about VM instance sizes and limits. We'll talk about disks. We'll talk about types of disks and caching and how caching plays a role in all of this. We'll talk about disk performance and how you can kind of from a disk warm-up type of thing. We'll talk about network bandwidth. We probably won't make it through all this, but we will get into, we're really going to take two parallel paths here. We're going to talk about the VM itself, right? Because you can't just spin up a SQL in a VM and say, all right, it's in a VM, it's good, just because we're hosting it and you're relying on our network infrastructure for performance. Right, so when you spin up a VM, we're good. Right, you can't stop there. You want to follow some of these best practices, but at the same time, we are going to talk about SQL Server best practices because you're hosting in a VM, you're still responsible for the SQL, and you still have to do things like tuning and backups and things like that. You're still responsible for that, so you can't call us and go, "My SQL Server performance sucks." Well, you know, let's look at your query. Let's look at your, what do you guys do? You still have certain responsibilities to the performance of your SQL Server, right? And that, not just disks, but that's SQL itself, right? Looks at your query plan, what kind of execution plans you're generating, right? Things like that, all right? And since it's a VM and, you still have your primaries and secondaries and things like that, you're still responsible for backing that sucker up. So do backups, all right? So we'll talk about all of these. All right. So Azure Blob Storage, what we need to understand, you guys are familiar with this, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. This is really just, this is a shared service. This is, you create a VM, it's a VHD, it goes into Blob Storage, right? These are storage page blobs, that's it. You can download the VHD on-prem, launch it locally, that's all good, right? But the key point here is bullet number 3, right? No direct perf correlation between a disk request made by one of their VM and that of a physical hard disk, right? So it's responsible for when you spin up a VM, you get a C drive and a cache D, right? And we'll talk about that in more detail. But then you can, those are physical disks. But then you can spin up and say, all right, I want to attach additional disks. These are not, while there's physical disks, these are really page blobs on the back end, right? So you have to understand that correlation between, I got a physical drive C and a drive D. And we'll talk about drive D, but then all these page blobs, and what do these mean? Because you're attaching these different, up to 1 terabyte disks. How do you use those, okay? So based on the total capacity, based on how much data you put in there, you get, there's no performance SLA right now. So you have to understand that, you get certain bandwidth, you get certain performance, and we'll guarantee you a certain amount, but you have to do your own testing, right? When you create SQL Server, when you put in your separating your disks and your databases and your logs, put those out, right? And we'll talk about that in more detail. But do your testing is what we're saying here. But this is shared disk, right? If I create a page blob in Azure Storage, someone else may put a page blob in Azure, on that same physical disk, right? So you have to understand how that works, and you may have to do something around how do I get that performance? Okay, all right. So, virtual machine sizes. So this is a basic tier. We have two tiers. We have basic tier and standard tier. Basic and standard. So here's your basic. So A0 through A4. So depending on what you're doing, is you guys should be familiar with this. Anywhere from shared CPU to eight core and up to one disk, up to 16 terabyte disks. Okay. Nothing out of the ordinary here, but these, if you look at the number of max IOPS, right, 16 by 300, what I want you to pay attention to is the max IOPS between the basic tier and the standard tier. So these workloads are really meant for the smaller workloads. If you don't need that high performance, that max IOPS, go for the basic tier. If you need the higher IOPS, a higher performance, need that better performance, then go to the basic tier, right? So now we're at 500 IOPS, right? So same thing, there's A0, but we're actually now up to not just A0, but a different temp drive size, bigger IOPS. Now we actually have A6 through A8 and A9, right? So think about this, and we'll actually see bigger VM sizes later. So why would we create a 56 and 112 gig VHD? Yep, say that again. Yeah, hackathon, in memory, right? Why don't use some of that SQL 14 performance in Azure VMs, right? So you get a 56 gig and 112 gig VM, be able to run, support some of your workloads in memory. Who's familiar with the in-memory OLTP in 14, right? If you're not, go read up about it, because this is improves performance drastically of your application for the high OLTP workloads, high write update scenarios. But better performance, better IOPS, right? But the key here is that these are, the different IOPS. Don't spin up a A6, standard if you only need like an A4 basic, right? This is where you say, okay, I need to do my math. What kind of workload am I doing? These type of workloads are really meant for the better, more bandwidth, higher OLTP, higher transactions, okay, those type of things, all right? And even on the standard, you get better, 10 gigabit Ethernet on the back end. You get 40 gigabit back end RDMA capable. So you get all the better performance just by going to standard. But don't use standard. And one of the things we see a lot is people say, I'm going to spin up one large instance of a VM and use that, and you're going to pay X amount for that. But when you really could say, I'm going to do some load balancing, maybe spin up two medium or smaller VMs and load balance that and get a better performance out of that. We see that a lot. Don't spin up one massive VM. Maybe spin up two VMs, save on cost, but get better performance as you load balance that out. That makes sense, right? So this is kind of what we're seeing. So do the testing and do the math to see if it's price performant for you, right? Okay, this is where people get into trouble. Disks. So when you spin up a VM, you get a drive C and a drive D, right? Drive C is always 127 gig, right? And it's persisted. And SQL Server by default is installed, and all the data files and log files are installed on drive C. You get a drive D, and this is a scratch disk. This is a temp disk, right? This is not persisted. If you have anything on, do not put a database on drive D. Do not put your temp DB on drive D. That's right. It's called a temp disk, but it is not meant for your temp DB. Okay, and I say that because people have done that, and then they reboot. Where's my temp DB? Well, you put it on the scratch disk. Temp DB is the drive D is a scratch disk. It is low latency. You will not get any performance out of it. You put anything on it and you reboot, it's gone. Don't put anything on drive D unless you don't care if it's gone or if it's rebooted. Right, that's fine. But don't put anything on drive C. Best practice states, now you want to do is when you spin up a VM, add data disks. What's a data disk? A data disk is an additional, this is the page blob, right? It's still it's a page blob. It still goes back on storage somewhere on a disk, on a spindle. But these are up to 1 terabyte, basically, drives that you can show up in your disk manager in the VM. You format it, and it acts just like a drive. And it can be up to 1 terabyte. And depending on the size of the VM, you can have up to 16 of these. Okay? So in other words, you can't spin up a A1 and expect to attach 16 1 terabyte disks, right? So depending on the size, depending on how many data disks you get. But these are persisted. It's page blob. Right? These are persisted. You can actually download that page blob, right, and attach it locally. But this is where your data files go. So best practice states that when you spin up SQL, the first thing you do is what? Attach data disks, and then what? And then move your MDB, your MDB and LDBs off of drive C to these data disks. Okay, and we'll talk about best performances around that, right? Get those off of drive C. In fact, get best practice states. You really want to create really three: one for your data, one for temp, and one for log, or at least three minimum, right? That's best practice. Get those off of drive C. Right, you'll still get performance. And we'll talk about performance around these as well, right? But these are also VHDs. You can still download these. Okay, so let's talk about disks. Let's do a quick demo on disks. Okay. So earlier I spun up a VM. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, so earlier I spun up a VM. There's going to be some pop quizzes in here. So I've got this VM, and I'm going to attach a disk. So I'm going to attach an empty disk, and I can say the size, right? So I can say up to, and I can't remember what the size, but I can say up to 1 terabyte, right? So 1023. Unfortunately, if I do 1024, it barks at me and says you can't do that. So it's 1023, right? Then I do cache. We're going to talk about caching, right? So I could say none, read-only, and read-write, okay? Why would I use caching? Performance. But is it best practice to automatically turn on caching? Yeah, don't. This is not best practice to automatically turn on caching, right? You want to really, there's only certain cases where you want to turn on caching, and we'll actually talk about that, okay? Now, the flip side of this is and I'm not going to go click OK because it'll take a few minutes to read this, but when we go in there, we'll talk about this in a little bit. When I do go format that, we'll talk about, what allocation size do I want to format this, right? And can I do striping and things like this? But this is fairly simple, right? Format a disk, create at least three, move your MDB and LDBs off, your data and log files off that, move your temp DBs, your temp databases off of that. If you want to, move your system databases off, if you want to. That's not required, but you could do that, right, for DR purposes, okay? But at this point, we can go in and attach a disk. So by default, one of the demos I did earlier is we had this app that does high transactions. So what I did is I created three VMs, one and attached disks, one with none, one with read-only, and one with read-write, right? And I said, so we ran these demos, and it was just a high OLTP demo. And what we saw, the performance that we saw was that if you're doing high OLTP, right, don't cache. Just don't cache. The best performance I got was when I set it to none, right? You can set it to read only, but then if you're doing a high OLTP, you're not gaining anything, right? If you set it to read write, you might. I did get a little better performance, but I still got, caching is just, for those situations where you need to do, the non-high OLTP, the non-write and update scenarios, okay? So just don't use caching unless you absolutely have to, and this is where you do your testing, okay? Not anything big, but again, you understand that when we attach these disks, you can go format them, and we'll talk about formatting these, and then best practices around striping and mirroring and things like that, okay? So a simple demo, but I'm not going to do a whole lot of demos just because of time, but there's a lot of information that we want to get to you. All right. Yes. I'm sorry, ask that one more time. Oh, so the question is, do we see any performance by moving the page files and the binaries off? Not the binaries. Leave those on drive C. You're not going to get any benefit off that, right? The page file, possibly, right? This is where, yes, if you're going to start doing page, you might see performance based on just the type of transactions, the type of workload you're going to get, right? So absolutely. Now, it's a good question. That's not a given, right? This is where you might have to start experimenting with, you know, how do I start moving these page files off, right? Binaries, don't bother, honestly. Don't bother. Leave those on drive C, okay? But you want to start experimenting, you know, again, like you could say, when you start partitioning or doing, table partitions and things like that, do I put those on different drives? So this is where you can start getting very granular as to, you know, how do I use these different, you know, these different, data disks, okay? So yes, experiment with that and see how that works, okay? All right, disk I.O. This could be, if you understand how blob storage works and how storage in general works, right, we sort of move things around automatically. So you may create a page blob on one, create a page blob, and it may go on one box. But later on, based on the performance, you know, we're automatically moving these things around, right? So we can, if you understand how partitioning works in Azure Storage, we may move things around. So that VHD or that data disk that you created yesterday or last week may have been moved to another disk to get better performance. So you may see different performance, you know, not drastic, but you may see things as things go around. Because you might have this noisy neighbor, as we say, that's taking a lot of resources on this one disk. So we may move your page blob off to another disk and things like that, right? So we say maintenance operations may, you know, have an effect. Well, that maintenance operation may be that we're moving your page blob over to another to get better performance. So you may see a degradation in a little bit as we're moving things around, but then you may see actually better performance, right? We try to be fairly consistent, but understand that we may be moving things around to get you better performance, right? Now, we have to talk about cost versus control, right? The cost is you're paying for the amount of storage. Right? How much? So if I create a 1 terabyte and attach a 1 terabyte disk, so if I don't put anything in there, how much am I paying? Zero, right? So there's benefits to that, but you know how much control do you get? So the control we actually control. So it's great cost, but the control means you have no control over where those data disks are going. You have no control where that C drive is going. Is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. I think it's actually a good thing because we're actually doing the preemptive. We want to get you better performance, so we're going to move things around and put this on a more performant machine for you, right? But you may see a degradation just for a little bit as we move things around, right? So good cost, but maybe not much. You know, the control, you have no idea, you have no control where things are going, and that's not, you know, my point is that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? Now you have Windows Azure disks versus locally attached disks. So I cannot, in other words. All these are Windows Azure or Microsoft Azure disks, but you cannot attach a locally attached disk unless you take that VHD and download it and attach a local disk, right? So you cannot attach a local disk when it's an Azure VM, when the VM's in Azure. Okay. Now I'm going to say that with a caveat because I haven't tried this, and I'm just, as I said, that I might be thinking. So you know. And one of the scenarios we're going to talk about is you know that you can actually take a SQL VM and domain join that to your local domain. You guys knew that, right? Right? That may be possible. I wonder if it's possible. If they haven't tried it, I wonder if it's possible to attach a local disk that way because it's domain join. Maybe. I don't know. I'll have to try it. But that might be possible. All right. All right. Any questions so far? Yes. 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 I think it's just because, if it gets, in other words, the tempdb file gets lost. In other words, anything on there gets deleted. What? Oh, well, that's true. Yeah, well, okay, yeah, so, thank you. So if you go back to the slide, it's less performant, right? So it's a latency thing. It's a scratch disk. It's not that we don't care, you're going to lose your data. Yeah, I think it is performance related.
There's also the chance that it will go away during the life of the VM session if the VM is migrated.
Yes, that's a good point, too. Thank you. So remember, we may be moving things around, right? We may move in your VM. What's that? Yeah. So the D drive is, look, if I need a transient, if I need to store stuff, just, you know, I don't care the life of that, right? BCP, you know, just it's a transient drive type of thing. Right? It's. Wait, ask that again. If yeah. So, let's just we could argue this all day long, right? It's not like we're taking your VHD and moving it all the time, right? But you know, the key here is it's more performance, right? This is a disk where we're giving you an opportunity to store to cache stuff here, but that could stuff could just go away, right? So if you want to use BCP, the key here is if you need to keep stuff around, do a data disk, right? Or use Drive C. Right, we don't care, but it's more performance, right? If you're going to put your tempdb on drive D, you're not going to get the performance you're looking for. Get that off to a data disk, or you know, even leave that on drive C if you want to. I really wouldn't recommend that, but you'll get better performance by moving that off, right? This is again, these are things where you could say, you know what, I don't care, put it on drive D. You know, depending on, it really depends on your workload. It depends on the I/O that you want to get. It really depends. You could say, hey, I'm good. I don't care. Put it on drive D. But if you're doing a high transactions with the best practice states for these guys that need that performance, if you look at the white papers, it says do not put tempdb on drive D because you could lose it and you'll get better performance moving it off drive D, right? We're not saying you couldn't. If you want to, do that. Right, but performance reasons. What we've seen from the field, don't put it on drive D. Right? Yes. Yeah, that's probably a good point. I haven't seen. As I said, that's probably true. Yeah. See, it can't rebuild the. You're saying if it won't rebuild the folder structure. Yeah, that's almost a given too, right? If you just go through and say, yeah, it's not going to go rebuild the folder structure. That's a good point, right? So these are sort of obvious things. If you thought about it, yeah, that's true. Good point. All right. Okay, let's keep going. Okay, the virtual. Was there another question? Okay, let's keep going. All right. So the point here is that, you know, oh, yeah, we're talking a virtual machine, the cache. Okay, we talked about cache, right? So we support read-only, read-write, and none. So on the OS disk, you'll support it. Read-write is default. We don't support caching, right? None is not supported. Again, this just goes back to the purpose of the cache is if you're doing a high OLTP, right, we want to reduce the I/O latency when the I/O rate is low, meaning if you're just doing a bunch of reads, right, this is where, for example, what we want to do is if you're doing a bunch of reporting, use caching, right? Because this is for a bunch of reads, right? But if you're doing, you know, we want to reduce the latency of the I/O. If you're doing a high OLTP, a high transaction, do not do caching, right? This is that demo. And if you want to see the demo, we gave this talk at TechEd North America, and we did these demos. And you can actually see the drastic performance difference between doing a caching and non-caching, read versus read-write versus none, right? Go watch those demos. The important thing here is that, you know, the different types of caching, but what we see is from a best practices standpoint, if you want to use caching, we really use things like high read. So from move that off to, you know, move it, put a database on one of your disks for reporting and things like that, cache that because you get better performance. For like clustered column store indexes, things like that, you want to cache those types of information, okay? That's really what we're saying here, right? So more of a read versus, caching is more meant for read scenarios, right? We're not going to do just cache. Okay, we have to understand also from the network infrastructure how this stuff works. So what every machine is given, basically, you've got this dedicated I/O path, right? So you've got the host OS, right? Then you have what we say, you got the OS drive, so you got, everything's managed by Hyper-V, And then we're managing the different types of disks, right? So we've got the hardware OS, you got the driver, and that's managing through the host cache. We're managing drive C, the data drives, and the temporary disks. And all this is managed by the hypervisor, okay? And then all that sits on top of the hardware infrastructure, right? So you get actually, because it's managed by this one level of infrastructure, you actually get great performance. But the key here is that even though you are attaching different data disks, up to 16, those data disks are still managed by the hardware OS, right? One layer of infrastructure. So you still get that best performance. So even though, like you could say, I'm going to create, you know, five data disks, those five data disks are more likely going to be created on different physical machines, different disks, but all those disks are still managed by the hardware OS and that infrastructure, so you get that clean, the clean hardware, and you get that, you get the performance you're looking for. Does that make sense? So this is all managed by Hyper-V and the hardware OS. So if you look at how, you know, the different, if you look at the, what am I trying to say, the containers, you know, where you spin up your VMs, these racks, right? They're all these different racks are managed by the same hardware OS, the same Hyper-V. So you still get you still get that management. And this is why we can do things like, hey, if you create a data disk, right, you still get at this VHD, you still get, you know, the one primary and two replica, but because it's managed by the hypervisor, if that one data disk goes down, it takes that one offline, promotes the secondary to a primary, and you're still up and running with that data disk, right? That's because it's still managed by the hypervisor and still managed by Azure Blob Storage, right? So one continuous management, okay? All right. So with that, let's get into some recommendations, storage, striping, things like that, right? Any questions so far? The last slide was just a look, here's how we look at the infrastructure. But let's get into some recommendations. Okay, this is now best practice. These are kind of things, this is kind of why you're here. This is things we've learned from the field, things you want to take away with, right? So storage recommendations, okay? Some of these are just no-brainer things, but you would not believe how many people don't follow this stuff, right? Number one, keep storage account and SQL VM in the same region. For two reasons, cost and performance. Right? Cost means, hey, look, you can put them in different regions, but anytime data leaves the data center, there's a cost to that, right? So put them in the same data center. That's kind of obvious, but you wouldn't believe how many people don't do that. Put them in the same data center. And disable geo-replication. Why are we disabling geo-replication on the storage account? Why are we doing that? Cost is a big one. Right, because now you have every time you're writing this to another data center. What's the other reason? Performance, right? Huh? Such as better solutions. Well, okay, yeah. So you're talking about HA things like that. Yeah, so you can do like always on things like that. Yes, that is a solution, and we could talk about that here if we have time. But yes. The other thing is, like, if we have to write, when we're writing to three replicas, especially that we're writing those replicas in another data center, there's latency. So there's a performance issue when we're writing, right? So one is cost, because you write to the primary and it has to write to the secondary, and that third secondary is in a different data center, so you got data leaving the data center, you have those costs. But also you have the latency associated with that, because now you have to write and wait for the replication to go back. Yep, I've committed, come back. So there's latency issues around with that. Not drastic, but if you're doing high OLTP, this could slow things down, right? So disable geo-replication, okay? Disk recommendations, right? Use for databases larger than 10. So if what they're seeing is if you have a database, if you've got a 100 meg database, don't spin up a data disk. don't spin up a data disk for that. Keep that on, you know, keep that on drive C. We don't care. That because if it's only like 100 meg or a gig, it's probably not high OLTP, high transaction database. But if you've got something that's high, you know, larger than 10 gig, right? Because one, you only have 127 gig on the C drive, but two, that means that you're starting to get higher, you know, probably a higher transaction database. So, move that off, right? There's a data disks. So what they recommend? What is the default? So when you attach, when we went through that demo, we created a data disk, right? We just said, here's the size. When you go into the disk manager in the VM, log into the VM, and you format that disk, what is the default allocation size? 4 gig. Is that what you want to pick? No, absolutely not. Make sure you will get much better performance. Make sure you pick at a minimum 64K allocation size. At a minimum, okay, 64K. If you're doing a high OLTP, do 64K. Can you pick higher than that? Absolutely. In fact, the recommendation is if you're doing like data warehousing and reporting things like that, do 256. All right? That's the recommendation. Feel free to experiment, but at least your minimum should be 64K. Experiment with 128, experiment 256, but at least pick 64, right? Again, set disk caching to none. Just by default, set disk caching to none. Temp disk. Again, this is, you know, we could argue this all day long. Performance isn't guaranteed. Just because it's scratch, things can go away. And this goes back to this gentleman's standpoint, right? If we do something, if we're doing some cleaning on the back end, some maintenance on the back end, that temp disk could go away. You could lose stuff, right? It's not just rebooting, but we may do some maintenance on the background. Your temp disk could, you know, we could refresh your temp disk, right? So management tasks, reset the D drive, not recommended. So this, again, just stay clear from, unless you don't care, things are lost or things like that. No, you'll see it. It's there. Yeah. So when you log in, Yeah, and don't get hung up on that we're going to move your VM. It's just, it's possible, right? But I think the key here is that it's just, look, it's not persisted, less performant. Just try to keep things off drive D, right? Just best practice. It's when you log into the D drive or, you know, VM, you'll see drive D. You'll see everything that you've stuck there unless we've had to move your VM. And, you know, don't get up on the move the VM thing. That's probably fairly rare, but it's good to know that it happens if we need to, but it's rare. Okay? All right. Disk striping. So anybody using disk striping right now? Did you guys know that you could do disk striping? Okay. So this is a scenario where it's recommended that you use the OS striping and not the SQL striping, right? So you set your stripe size to 64K for OLTP workloads, again, 256 for data warehouse local, right? If you're using for Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012, you can use storage spaces. You guys familiar with storage spaces? This is a Windows Server scenario. It's based, but if you're using 2008 R2 or earlier, use dynamic disks, right, for striping there. Okay, you can stripe these multiple Azure disks to get increased I/O throughput, right? So you can stripe these to make it look like one drive. It actually works. We've got several customers doing that. This is a scenario where it's not, you know, it's best practice states don't automatically stripe. But if you have to and you want to get that, you know, if it requires, then you can stripe. That's what we're saying here. But you don't have to go stripe, but it will work, okay? All right. Any questions about this so far? Right. It's fairly straight. We're not saying go out and do striping automatically, but it's there available if you need to, okay? All right, VM recommendations. So what we saw is a lot of people said, people automatically, right, we have the basic tier and the standard tier, and what we saw was a lot of people went and said, okay, I want that performance, I need those IOs, and they went and said, hey, I'm going to go spin up this high VM. That's not necessarily the right and the best practice, okay? If you're running SQL Server, if you need Enterprise Edition, use a standard A3 or higher. If you're doing Standard Edition, an A2 or higher, right? Just because an A3 says I get better, more memory, just the memory and better CPU, right? Just the higher you go. You may not, but this is where it's up to you to determine what size of the VM you get, right? And you can actually change that size of the VM through the portal, right? So if you spin up an A4 and you don't need that A4, spin up, you know, just drop it down on A3 or drop it down to a couple A2s, right? Do that load balancing. This is where it's up to you to decide what's the right configuration for your environment. but minimum what we've seen from the field. And again, this information we've taken from the field is that a minimum, if you're doing enterprise and A3, standard and A2, okay? If you're doing kind of the in-memory OLTP, you actually need more than that, right? So you might need like A8 or A9, okay? Things like that. All right, so we're good so far. So we've talked about from the VM. Is there anything, because now we're going to get into the SQL best practices, right? We've talked about from the VM side of things. Any questions about what we've talked about so far? Yeah. So, yeah, the question is, if we've done striping and we lose one of those disks, is it transparent that it'll take one of those secondaries and remove it into the stripe? So, from my understanding, you do not lose your stripe. It should take that secondary and move it into your stripe, right? That's what we've seen, okay? So, we haven't seen a whole lot of stripes. There's just a need for that, but it's available. But that's what kind of the reason from the HADR side. We can take that one of those secondaries, move it back into the stripe, right? Any other questions? All right, we good so far? All right, let's keep going. This is SQL Server best practices, right? So by default, it says, you know, place your database files across multiple data disks. This is just, we talked about this earlier, this is a given. The minute you spin up a VM, like that VM I spun up, everything's configured to run on drive C, everything. First thing to do is you spin that sucker up is create double data disks and reconfigure SQL Server to move your data files, log files, and temp files off to those data disks, right? And from this gentleman asks, feel free to take it even further, right? Do your table partitions and your other partitions, move those off, and just start doing testing, right, to see what kind of performance you're going to get, okay? Create a single operation volume on top of multiple data disks. You can do that, right? So you can actually, if you want to, create data disks and say, okay, I'm going to stripe my data volume, my operating system volume across those, right? So what that gives me is I'm not limited now to 127 gig. That might be worth something to do, right? But it's not necessary, but you could do that. Okay, and again, here we're back to striping, right? So this is kind of, I'm not going to read this, but this says you've got some flexibility to what you can do with your OS disks and your data disks, right? I can do striping of the operating disk. I can create multiple data disks and stripe those for my data files, create other data disks and stripe those for my log files. I've got some flexibility, right? The point there is that for standard tier A2, we recommend a configuration of 3 data disks for data files and tempdb, right, and 1 data disk for log files. So good information, and this is what we're seeing for an A2. This makes you, you might say, okay, if I go to an A3 or an A4 or an A5 in standard tier, do I need to do that type of type of configuration? Maybe, maybe not. But this is kind of things that this is what we're seeing. So you might want to implement something like that, right? And you can adjust the number of data disks dedicated to log or data storage pool accordingly, right? So if you need more more data disks for your log files, you've got the ability. Now, you can only go up to 16, but really, how many people need 16 1-terabyte disks for a log file or things like that, right? So you've got that flexibility to say, all right, I need another data disk for my log file. Great, do that and add that to your stripe, things like that, right? So you've got that flexibility there. Okay. System databases, right? You can not recommend, I shouldn't say not recommended. You can, if you need to, move those and place those on a data disk. Why would I do that? Why would I keep those off drive C? Yeah, I might want to move. Yeah, I want bring those down to local, right? Another thing is for DR, right? For DR purposes, if my system crashes, I can recover those system files, right? So from a disaster recovery perspective, I certainly might want to consider moving my system databases off to a data disk, right? And there's reasons there, right? Performance variance, configuration, and performance bottleneck, right? So again, heavy use of DryD can introduce IOP constraints. We probably beat drive D up enough. We're not, so let's put that to bed. Right? This is just recommendation, but you know, from a configuration, upon VM downtime, SQL Server and file placement. Right? So again, this is where we want to say, hey, what happens if I reboot my server? Where are my system files? If my drive C crashes, how do I recover from that? So a lot of people, what we see, a lot of people saying, I'm going to at least move master off and put that on a data file. Right? So if drive C crashes, I can recover from that. Right? So there's some config things that we're seeing from there. Okay? Anything else? Yeah, so I think this should make sense. All right. One of the things that we've seen, and this is kind of an interesting concept. Anybody familiar with disk warm-up? You guys read anything about this? Right? This is an interesting concept, disk warm-up, right? Why would we want, what is disk warm-up? Why would we warm up the disks? Not really cache data. What else? So this is kind of interesting. What we're seeing is that this has to do with performance. Disk warm-up really says, if I want to get that high I.O., run some, and it actually, if on the back of this, at the end of this deck, is a link to where you can read more about this. And actually in that link, in that blog post, have some sample queries you can run. What they're recommending is that prior to running, you know, if you've got a high OLTP transaction, basically saying, they're saying, warm up your data disks, right? Run just some temporary workload that will warm up your data disks, right? Because what happens is when you warm up the data disks, the infrastructure, Azure Storage, says, all right, I've got a high OLTP, so I'm going to prepare. I'm really just going to prepare for high OLTP so I get that throughput, right? So that's why they call it priming the pump. What happens is if things go down, there's always that information, there's always the shifting going around. I don't want to say moving your VHDs, but what happens is that if you think about how Azure Storage works, it really says, you know, it might dedicate more performance and better IOPS to this data disk based on the what's happening on that VHD. So if it says, if you prime the pump, if you start warming this up, it's going to go, hey, I've got this. And so you'll actually get better performance by doing kind of a priming the pump prior to running your workload, right? Otherwise, it'll take a while to warm up, and then it'll go. It's kind of an interesting concept. But what it's really saying is, look, if you want better transactions, if you want better throughput, better IOPS, or better I.O., warm it up, right? Kind of interesting concept, but this is what they're seeing. People would run their workload, and they'd say, you know, they look at it, and all of a sudden it would just go up and up and up and up and up and up. All right, and then it would kind of tear off. I'm like, well, why would this work? So performance would just kind of increase as they were doing their workload. Then all of a sudden it would level out, and they'd be good. In the research, they found out that if they just warmed it up first, bam, it would go, right? So it's kind of interesting. So read that blog post, and I should have put it here, but it's just sample queries, sample statements you can run to warm it up. But you know, you can just do anything. Just kind of just update table where zero equals zero, something like that, just to kind of get those disks warmed up and go. Right? It's kind of an interesting concept, right? The issue here is that it's kind of a 10-minute window. If there's no activity for roughly about 10 minutes, then it'll start to cool down, and so you have that warm-up effect again, right? So this is where if you can anticipate that cool down, but you know you're going to warm up again, then keep it warmed up by doing some sort of transaction to keep those disks going, right? But it's about roughly what they've seen in the field is roughly about 10 minutes, right? If there's no activity for about 10 minutes, then it'll start to cool down. Kind of interesting out there, right? It's kind of interesting. So the question is, if I provision a data disk, let's say I provision a 1 terabyte data disk, so pop quiz again. So I create a 1 terabyte data disk. Does it actually go out and create a format at 1 terabyte? No, it doesn't, right? So even though you can go in and you can format it, right? Basically, what it's going out there is it's not reserving 1 terabyte of disk on a spindle. It's basically saying you have a quota, right? And I don't know how they go, you know, I don't know the correlation between, you know, okay, you know, because in the VM, it shows you have 1 terabyte disk. But it did not go reserve 1 terabyte of space on the drive out there, right? It's more of a quota. Okay, and that's kind of why they took kind of the disk warm up, because you know you could put a blob file, you could upload a video and it might go on this, you know, on this physical drive. You might upload another file and it might go on this next physical drive, right? So that 1 terabyte disk could actually span multiple spindles, actual, you know, different spindles, right? That's just a quota. So this is why they're kind of, this is why the disk warm up is kind of important, because you want to warm that up. Where are my disks going? You kind of really want to. It's telling Azure Storage, look, I've got some things going, and kind of warm up these spindles to keep them going. Right? Does that make sense? I don't know if I explained that right, but this is, hopefully that makes sense. Right? Otherwise, if everything was on the same spindle, you might not have this. You might not need this effect. But since you know they span spindles. Right, you want to tell Azure Storage, look, I'm coming. Right. All right. Performance monitoring. Okay. One of the key things, the problem with, you know, I think this is a messaging issue, honestly, because what we've told you from day one is that, look, trust us. Right. Create a VM, it's good. Right. And I think there's some truth to that, but I think that what the message is could be a little dangerous there, right? Spin up a VM, we'll monitor it for you, but what we don't monitor is the performance of that VM, right? And I think that's where people are getting lost, is that we say spin up a VM, we'll monitor the health of the VM. What we can't do, and what you don't want us to do, is reach into that VM and start peeking and poking around, right? This is where, you know, we'll monitor the overall health and status of that VM. And again, I don't want to, right? This is why, hey, if the host is unstable, we'll take that VM offline and move it to another host, right? This is why we're saying, look, we could do that. And again, it's very infrequent, but we do that, right? But we're monitoring the overall health of the VM. What we don't monitor is the performance of what's going on in that VM, okay? And this is kind of where that disconnect is because that's your responsibility, right? Because we don't know your workload. You know, you could say, well, you know, if it gets to this, you know, threshold, you know, do something about it. Well, you know, my definition of a workload or a threshold might be different than your definition, right? And so think of the work we would have to do to allow you to define all that information, right? This is your responsibility. So we give you the tools to go in and monitor, to say, look, if something happens, monitor that VM, because that's your responsibility. We'll make sure that the VM is healthy and up and stable, but we're not going to peek into that VM and look, because you don't want us doing that. We just guarantee the IOPS. That's correct. We guarantee the IOPS and the health of that VM, right? The SLA. But if something's going on inside that VM, that's your responsibility. So use some of these KPIs to go, look what's going on, right? And we sort of help you with that, right? If you go to the portal, we give you some of the IOPS, right? We tell you what's going on. But there's only so much that we can tell you. So use some of these to look at processor time, memory time, batch request per second, things like that, right? There are OS KPIs, there are actually SQL KPIs that you need to be looking at to go, how's the performance of my VM? And these are some of them, right? So, you know, maximum value for process server, average value, yes? Does the IOPS guarantee apply to that warm-up time? Oh, that's a good question. I was going to say no. Well, say that again. It's 500 maximum. Three by or however many, like the size of your, yep. That's the max you're going to get, right? So I don't think that has anything to do with the warm up time. That's just the max you're going to get. So that's why I was going to say no, but I didn't want to. But I'll double check that. Okay. Okay, any other questions? Yes. Yep. So what did you get out of this session? To become the noisy neighbor. Thank you very much. This has been great. That's not kind of what I wanted you to get out of this session, but in essence, how do you answer that? in theory, you know, stop the recording. Yes, start the recording. In theory, you want to be, you know, because at that point, yeah, that goes back to the disc warm-up and things like that, right? So, well, you know, and at that point, you know, Azure gets smart enough to go, hey, right, I might do some dedication here, right, and dedicate resources to this to you, right? So we don't, you know, the noisy neighbor is kind of a bad, right? But it's theoretically, it says, you know, yes, if you're a noisy neighbor, that's really not necessarily a bad thing, because what we're going to do is we're going to move you and say, all right, let's move you, or move the guy off. And so, yeah, in essence, being a noisy neighbor is a good thing. Yeah. Exactly, right. Well, you know, and Azure's smart enough to go, hey, you know, this noisy neighbor, we're going to move him to these, you know, because there's that whole, I just drew a blank on the name, you know, the whole, not the platform, but it's managing all the nodes and all the servers and saying, okay, well, you know, what do I need to move around? And again, I don't want you to get the idea that we're moving things around all the time, but, you know, yeah, we might be moving things around based on noisy neighbor. And, you know, the key concept here is, you know, we want the best performance for you. And as such, if you're a noisy neighbor, we might move you, or we might move not the noisy neighbor to a guy so he gets performance, and then maybe you get that, you know, better resources. So, yeah, so that was a round the bush way to say, yeah, be the noisy neighbor, right? That's the Microsoft answer. All right. Okay, let's talk about SQL, right? So again, we're two things, right? So we talked about disking, we talked about caching, talked about best practices around that, what we've seen, right? But again, this is why I said at the very beginning, in the 8 minutes left, just because you go into a VM does not mean that your SQL is still going to perform. You could still do a lot of the best practices around, you know, moving things off to data disks, but that does not guarantee that you're still going to get the performance you want, right? Because look, at some point, a bad query is going to surface itself again, right? That's just the truth, right? So you have to look at, part of it is, yes, I'm still doing the best practices from the VM side, but you still have to do the best practices from the SQL side. So your best friends in the SQL need to be these DMVs. OS wait stats, right? OS wait says, what am I waiting on? And there could be things like, hey, I'm waiting on disk, or I'm waiting on some of the replication things, right? Exec query stats, I have virtual file stats, right? We've just attached some virtual files. What's going on there, right? So use some of these DMVs. There's a lot of other DMVs. We might get to some of these in a little bit. But there's some of these DMVs that look to say, how is my SQL Server performing? And the IO virtual file stats gives you an idea, because you've just attached a bunch of virtual disks. That tells you what is going on with those virtual disks. You need to be using, if you're using SQL in a VM and a higher OLTP, you need to be looking at these DMVs, right? Exec query stats tells you, look, you know, all the exec query DMVs, what queries are running, which ones you can look at through that DMV tells you, look, in fact, right through the portal will tell you kind of your top queries that are run, executing and the worst performing ones. And it pulls it from these DMVs. The DMV actually gives you a lot more information to say, look, what are my, you know, reads per, you know, what are my max reads, max writes, things like that. You need to be looking at these DMVs, right? Perf counters, right? Download this deck, and look at, here's the perf, you know, for IOPS, for latency, for block size, for throughput, right? You need to be looking at the, you know, how, you know, even it's, even though it's SQL Server in a VM, what are the query plans that it's generating based on my configuration of SQL Server, right? So look at disk reads per second, disk writes per second, average disk bytes, right? You want to know how, you know, again, you just attached these data disks. You want to know how these data disks are performing. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right. You need to understand, you know, this is critical information, right? So look, take a look at this. Yeah, you take a picture, but these are, you know, you get a, you know, this desk deck will be available. But use these, like DMIO virtual file stats. Again, use some of these. And these are kind of things from the KPIs you want to start monitoring, right? All right, I got 5 minutes left. Troubleshooting SQL, right? Again, Perfmon. Perfmon's not available in the Azure SQL database, but it is available in SQL and VM. Use Perfmon, right? Use PowerShell. PowerShell people, gluttons for punishment. Yes, use PowerShell. PowerShell is a great way to look at diagnostics, do SQLIO testing and parsing, right? You can use the SQLIO command line. Use DMVs and your X events to understand your SQL Server performance. These are just standard things, right? Again, we're monitoring the health of the VM, but it's still your responsibility to monitor what's going on, on inside that VM. So use these, okay? You also have that dashboard I talked about, right? It's the monitor tab. So basically, just a quick snapshot tells you what's your CPU percentage, what's your disk writes, and you can actually add, you can see in this screenshot, you can actually add quite a few, right? If you're not looking at this, you need to be looking at this. If you're not using those KPIs, use those KPIs, right? Just because I've configured my VM based on what we talked about earlier doesn't mean that you're still going to get, you still need to look at something, you know, because you still may have some tweaking, a little bit of tweaking to do, okay? So taking all these VHDs, putting those in blob storage, monitor blob storage, right? And you can actually get very granular. So you can turn on and enable monitoring and look at minimal or verbose, because there may be an issue with blob storage that you don't know about, right? So look at what's going on in blob storage, okay? And you can actually aggregate all that information down, download that data, and start taking a look, right? Honestly, it's almost might be the last place I look, right? Because we're doing a lot of that stuff for you. But hey, you know, it doesn't help to say, hey, you know, if I can't figure it out, you might want to, this is another place to look. Okay. All right. Another app design, right? One of the scenarios that we're really trying to push is you've got a lot of information on-prem. But, you know, why would we use SQL in a VM? And it may be, look, in a hybrid scenario, we may want to move some of that workload off and do what they call shunting, right? So you spin up a VM, do some of the workload, then shut the VM down, right? But it's just because you're in a VM, you still have to make sure that the design right, right? So moving to the cloud doesn't mean, you know, solve app design issues. Like, if you've got a chatty app, it doesn't matter, right? If you've got, you know, just a hide at read, right, you know, just... Again, your database be configured, but bad app design isn't going to, you know, good database design isn't going to solve a bad, you know, help a bad app design. So if you've got a chatty application, and that's just, especially if you're talking, again, cost and things like that, if you've got a lot, you know, your app's on-prem and your database is in the cloud and you've got a lot of things like that, right? Or if your app's in the cloud, you know, everything's up in the cloud, doesn't matter. You still may have a performance issue just because you have a chatty app, okay? And lastly, we will get to this, actually backups, right? So again, even though your database is in the cloud, you still need to be backing that sucker up, right? Even though you've got a VHD and that's stored in storage, you've got that redundancy and that, you know, disaster recovery scenario, back up your database, right? Back it up to, Azure Disk Space is cheap, right? 1 terabyte for a month is, what, a couple bucks? Back up that database, right? And yeah. Yep. Yep. Oh, yeah. So in, with 2012 SP1 CU8 or something like that, and with 2014, you guys know that you can actually, you know, backup command, backup to a URL, correct? Well, you're saying that that's what you're using, right? Yeah, and so that's, yeah, the problem is that there it doesn't show up as a, you know, you can't browse your backup files, you can't, right, things like that. And that's, you know, I think, yeah, they know about that. It would, you know, it's not that you're backing up the disk and there's all my devices and things like that, and they're all listed, right? But you're basically saying it'd be nice through SQL Server Management Studio to see all the things I back up. What's that? There are tools on CodePlex that provide that, right? And this is kind of essentially what it is. There are tools on CodePlex that allow you to do that. I think it'll get better, right? Yeah, password and all that kind of stuff. This is nice because you basically create a credential and then just say, okay, you know, and all you're doing is you're changing the backup, right? Yes, we understand. I think it'll get better, but I still think it's nice because you're not limited to, you know, near limitless storage, right? And storage is cheap. All right, we got time's up. So essentially, this is how it works. All right, so traditional SQL Server best practices. Again, this is just a recap. Look. Nothing's, even though you've followed disk best practices or VM best practices, you're not going to get around SQL best practices. You still have to do SQL best practices. One of the interesting ones is, you know, disable auto shrink and don't use auto grow. Well, if we have almost bottomless storage in Azure, why would we disable auto grow? Right? They say so. Disable auto grow, pre-allocate instead. Well, that's because you still have to, right? It's still taking resources, so pre-allocate. I'd rather pre-allocate once and then monitor that, and then if I have to, you know, alter the database, right? Again, it's latency and performance related. VM best practice. Yes. No, it's a standard. For the asynchronous. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. So this is just a recap. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time. We're already 1 minute over. So this is just everything we talked about, right? Where you place your files, move system databases off, do striping if you need to, but avoid OS disk striping, use SQL striping instead, right? Those type of things based on SQL Server. Like that slide earlier we saw, if you need what version of Windows Server you're running, right? We saw that. Again, warm up your disks. There is a, again, download this deck because in the related content slide there are links to these where you can find this information about, you know, the blog post and some of the queries you can run to do disk warm up and things like this. And just remember, I think the bottom, let me wrap up with this. Just remember, if you're IO bound, add another data disk. All right, that's it. As you're using some of these DMVs and you're saying, hey, look, I need better performance. Easy solution, add another data disk. Okay? All right, was this helpful? All right, thank you very much.